Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we're going to be talking about the world according to your newborn. With a very underdeveloped brain that is making over a million connections per second, newborns occupy a unique reality. What do you as a parent need to know in order to tap into their built-in instruction manual? Greer Kirschenbaum has answers. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Birthsong Botanicals Postpartum Herb Bath, which supports perineal healing and self-care regardless of how you gave birth. Go to birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Branch Basics, making cleaning your house simple, affordable, and sustainable with products that actually work. Get a free trial by using the code BIRTHFUL5 at branchbasics.com. Just pay for shipping. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for your support, all the love you give the show, and your feedback and requests, ratings, reviews. I truly appreciate it. If what you hear is helpful, then make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. You can also support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Birthsong Botanicals and Branch Basics, or by becoming an official Birthful Patreon at patreon.com/birthful. As a thank you, patrons get access to extra content from this and future episodes. And also a quick reminder that if you've only prepared for the having a birth part and not so much for the having a baby part, you're only halfway there. Let me help you make those first few weeks with your newborn so much easier. Go sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. You can do them in your pajamas and rewatch them after baby is born or as a refresher for second baby. They're yours for life. So go check it out at birthfulcourses.com. All right. My guest today is the fabulous Greer Kirschenbaum. And I say fabulous because she's a doula who's a neuroscientist. How super cool is that? We're going to be diving deep into the newborn brain and also a bit into parenting styles and what constitutes a secure attachment. Then in the extra content on the Birthful Patreon page, we talk about how a birthing parent's brain changes and reorganizes after having a baby in order to increase their nurturing abilities. So if you want to check that out, like I said before, patreon.com/birthful. All right. Let's get right to it. Hello, Greer. It is so great to have you here on the show today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. And so we initially talked like in December.
Yeah.
When I reached out to you. Since then, like you had just given birth and you are living right now the practice, theory and practice of having, you know, life with a newborn from your perspective as a neuroscientist. So
yes,
tell us more about that. And actually, tell us a little bit about yourself first and then end up with your recent experience as a mom of a newborn.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect ending to the story, I think. So I'm sort of got into this world from academia. So I did my undergraduate degree in neuroscience and was really interested in how experience shapes the brain, especially in early life, and studied that a lot. And then I continued to do a PhD in mental health and experience, how experience in early life shapes lifelong mental health. And I did that at the University of Toronto. And then I went on to do a postdoctorate fellowship at Columbia University, which is an incredible place to study infant development and early life experience. There's so many incredible accomplished researchers there. I learned a lot there too. And I kind of always had in my mind an idea that I wanted to bring this kind of knowledge to regular people, because we talked about it just as a given that, you know, mental health is so important and sort of formed largely in early life. But when I got to talk to people outside of university setting, people didn't know about this stuff. And, you know, it's our public dollars, you know, funding these incredible studies, and there's no voice for them. So I was really, really motivated to do that after I left Colombia. So I've sort of been spending the past few years working with families as a birth doula and postpartum doula, and also creating settings to teach a lot of this neuroscience of early life. So it's kind of like workshop settings, podcasts like this, and sort of any way I can get the information out. And then I had my own baby 21 weeks ago, and it's been incredible. So I always said that I kind of teach the science and the art of nurture in early life and how that builds the brain. And I'm really, really learning the art form of it now, having a baby all the time. And yeah, it's been wonderful, really, really wonderful. Because it's really. I was thinking the other day, I was walking with my son. I had him in a carrier, and holding his hands, and we just go sort of going for a walk around the block, and it was just such a beautiful moment. And I was like, I'm just sort of thinking about, how wonderful this feeling is, and the experiences for both of us. And then I was like, oh yeah, and I'm building his brain. It's cool too.
Oh yeah, there's that thing that I've been studying for years and years.
There's that part. So yeah, so there's two sides to it. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to give a special shout out to the fact that you're probably the only doula neuroscientist in the world.
Yeah, I think I am. From what I can tell, I'm the
Yeah.
sure.
If any listeners knows of another one, let me know, 'cause
Yeah.
we'll put you guys in contact if there is another doula neuroscientist. That's so fantastic. I love that.
I'd love to meet someone else.
Right? Your village.
It
So in terms of this, like the meat and potatoes of experiences shaping the brain, what do parents need to know about their newborn's brain? Because, like, one of the things that was really surprising to me that it wasn't until I realized this that I went, wait, of course, I've got to like take a different perspective to how to this relationship is the fact that I felt at the beginning when I was considering and thinking how to interact with my newborn while thinking about how I was going to do that while pregnant. It was always from an adult approach, right? So I have to get the flashcards and I have to get the black and white mobile and I have to like stimulate their brain and I have to do all these things. Like it was from that perspective. And once I was in it, just the fact of realizing, hold on a second, this baby probably doesn't even know that those hands are hers. Like, there is so much learning that has to be done for this level of cognition that I'm already applying to her that it's ridiculous. So let's do that. Let's switch things and look at things from a newborn's brain perspective. What is going on with them?
Yeah, I think it's so, I mean, I see when I work with people how transformative it is to understand this. So infants' brains, so human infants' brains are really undeveloped at birth. A lot of necessary parts of the brain are connected. So I like to talk about, three, the brain has like thousands of parts, but we'll talk about three sort of general parts. The first part is the brain stem. So sort of like the very back of the brain, the core of the brain. And this is regulating breathing, temperature, everything that keeps the baby alive, basically. So a baby is able to do these things at a very, a low level. Like they'll still develop, but they're born with that. And then the next part is the emotional brain. So the emotional brain is the part of the brain that's really, really important to connect in a positive way in early life, because it's really, really plastic in babies, and it's seeking input at all times. And the third part is sort of our cognitive thinking brain, and that does start to develop in infancy, but it really, really matures sort of after 3 years kind of thing. So when we're thinking about what is going on with our baby, they're really kind of living in an emotional, social world. And they're really attuned to relationships in early life. They're also building motor skills and sensory skills. But the emotional stuff is sort of what is most important for us to know about.
And when we talk about the reptile brain, is that more just the brainstem or the brainstem and the emotional brain together?
I think usually when people talk about the reptile brain, they're talking about the amygdala. So that amygdala is part of the emotional brain. And the amygdala is the part of our brain that alerts us to fear and threats in the environment. And it also is involved in positive things. But yes, usually people refer to the emotional brain. But the brainstem is also a really, really primitive part of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of, like, from what you just said, it was very interesting to me that cognitive functioning starts kicking in more around 3 years old, which kind of answers that question of, like, can you spoil your baby? Let's jump into that. I had questions. I'm going to jump around the order. Can you spoil your baby?
Yeah, absolutely not. So the biggest message about having the emotional brain be so plastic and having the cognitive brain not developed yet in infants is parents kind of have to be a missing brain part to their babies. So within the emotional brain, there's a stress system. And so the stress system in babies can easily get activated, both, you know, in positive arousing situations, but also in stressful situations too. And in us adults, our cognitive brain is what can shut off our stress system. But because that's not developed in babies, they just don't have the ability to do that. And so when they cue, when they are, you know, overstimulated or stressed out, they actually are requiring the parent to act as sort of a missing brain part to them. So if we're talking about spoiling an infant, that usually means, like, don't respond to every cry, let them figure it out themselves, that kind of stuff. And they just physically aren't able to do that. So every time we do respond and help them regulate their stress and regulate their arousal levels, we're lending them our brain a little bit, our developed brain, and we're also teaching their system how to regulate later on in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think that is, like, if that is such a huge concept to take away. If you take nothing else away from this episode today, take that away from it, mm-hmm. listener, because it's the idea that, you know, if you can, I always talk about how those first 3 months, especially, we should have pouches. We're like carrier mammals. It's more like a kangaroo relationship than what we have. Yeah. And how much of not only just that brain, of that cognitive brain of regulating them that way, but also, like, with the skin to skin, regulating their temperature, regulating their breathing response, regulating, like, you are kind of their nervous system for a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that would be so nice if we had a pouch and we didn't need to use the wrap up an infant
the
carrier
slings,
every
yeah.
time. Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. why we have so many of them sometimes, right? It's like, but yeah, absolutely. So stress, you know, that's sort of what I've studied, and that's, like, always where I go to, but it's linked to everything else you talked about. So regular heartbeat, regular breathing, temperature control, oxygen in the blood, glucose in the blood, everything stays stable when the baby has access to regulation from a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
So hugely important. So it's not that they're trying to, like, get you to do thing and you're like, oh, you're manipulating me, or I'm going to spoil you if I give you this too much. It's like you're actually missing this part of you. it hasn't evolved yet or developed yet, let me, I've got to step in.
Absolutely.
It's hard because those first few months are all, you have to give so much before you even get a damn smile, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's like, when you get that smile, it is good. It is a good day.
Yes, right? It's a one-way relationship. But I think even having that knowledge of why it's like that can be a bit of more of, I don't know, centering, grounding, less crazy making.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would add to it is... So the fear with spoiling and with all that kind of stuff is dependency. And really our babies we're interdependent in the beginning. Our nervous systems, you know, they're completely interdependent. And by responding and providing that regulation to the baby, that is what makes their nervous system strong and independent later on when it's appropriate. And if we don't give, you know, regular responses and calm them down when they need to be calmed down, that actually does make them more, not make them, but it increases the possibility that they'll be more dependent and anxious later on.
If we're not responding, or how about over responding? Like, what is optimal respondingness, responsiveness versus like rescuing or ignoring?
Yes, that's a really good question. And that's actually something I'm thinking about all the time with my baby now. Because, you know, we talk about, oh, you know, keeping baby close is nurturing and responding constantly is nurturing, but you don't want to go over the top too, because babies do also need some independence and independent play and all that kind of stuff too. I think spending time to really speak baby and sort of figuring out what the baby's communication is so important for that. Because a book can't tell you how to do it. An expert can't tell you how to do it. The baby is kind of the one who's gonna be cueing what they need. So I find that in my everyday life really interesting. So, you know, my baby right now, he's like really happy on his own for different periods of time in the day. And sometimes I'm like, oh, should I be going over and interacting with him and doing some, you know, back and forth conversation? But he's playing and he's happy. And when he's not, then he'll, you know, I'll listen for it. He'll say, hey, come and get me. And that's sort of the time to change it up.
Yeah. And I think there's so many questions I have regarding that, because then we step into like, yes, babies, what is this cueing and how can we tune into the different cues and also the different temperaments? Because how long a baby can play by themselves really varies baby to baby. So, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get deep into that. We'll be right back. Imagine soaking in a healing herbal bath with nothing else to worry about while you bond with your newborn and get to know each other. That is one super helpful way to honor your postpartum recovery. Aside from the relaxing benefits to your nervous system, taking a postpartum herbal bath from Birth Song Botanicals can soothe your sore perineal muscles and hemorrhoids, slow down bleeding, minimize swelling, and help dry your newborn's umbilical cord, all while creating a restoring bonding experience between you and your baby. Birth Song Botanicals was founded by midwife Maria Chowdhury, who has attended hundreds of births and has seen firsthand the incredible difference in the healing process from the people who take baths and the herbs versus the ones who don't. Basically, your perineum's gonna thank you. These postpartum herb baths promote healing regardless of how you give birth or whether you have stitches or not. In case of a cesarean birth where staples were used, it is recommended to wait until the staples have been removed before doing the postpartum herb bath. And in any case, it's always good to double check with your trusted health practitioner. If you are concerned about the umbilical cord, the idea here is that you're not just getting it wet. Since this is an herbal bath made with therapeutic herbs, it's designed to aid the body's recovery process, and that includes helping the healing of the umbilical cord. Maria tells me that when the baby gets immediately out of the bath, the cord might look a little wet, but that with the recommended 3 to 5 baths, the cord tends to fall off in a few days. Basically, more than a relaxing bath, this is herbal medicine. Give your postpartum body some healing love. Go check out the postpartum herb bath at birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. So birthsongbotanicals.com and the code is BIRTHFUL for 10% off. And we're back talking about the world according to your newborn. So from what I'm hearing, you have a lovely baby that likes to play by himself.
I know. It's really amazing. Because it's not all babies will do that at the age she's at. Absolutely not. They're all so different.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about that of, you know, we always hear that babies don't come with their own instruction manual, but in fact, they kind of do. So maybe mm-hmm. it's that it's written in a different language. What are some ways that parents can learn that language and figure out how their baby is communicating?
Yeah, this is probably, you know, the most important thing for people to focus on when they want to enrich the baby. So, I mean, I feel like I learned it. My grandmother was so incredible with babies. I feel like on some level, I remember my interactions with her, and she kind of passed that on to my mom and my aunt. And so I sort of saw it modeled a lot growing up with my cousins and in my family. And even now, spending time with my mom and my son, I'm catching on to more of the tips and tricks to do it. But I think it sort of goes like this. The first step is figuring out a way to just breathe for a second and get really calm. And if people have all different ways of doing that, but you want to be present and calm, and then just walk and really observe your baby. So, you know, for scientists like me, I've spent so much time observing behavior. And it doesn't, you know, it's not something we always do. So it's sort of a new thing for people. Really observing your baby's behavior. Think like, how do they vocalize? How do they move? And then kind of from there, you'll start to sort of put it together. Like, oh, they're asking for food. They're asking to be picked up. They're calm and cool and okay by themselves for a minute. Does that sort of answer the question?
Yeah, no, that is definitely like the approach to go about. And then are there some signaling that is kind of more standard for different types of action? So for example, like we know babies have sleep cues and hunger cues and each baby's going to do it slightly different, but there are a lot of commonalities in it. And, you know, if baby's hungry, there tends to be lip smacking and sticking out the tongue. And sort of like if you give, I personally find giving baby a voice as you are observing can be really helpful in figuring out what's going on. So it's like, oh, I can see that you're looking for that boob. Your head's moving to one side and the other and you're opening your mouth. Where is that boob? Where is that boob? Like it's a ridiculous commentary, but it can help me understand, you know, get to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's doing a lot of things. That's really helping. I love that. And it also is verbal input for the baby too, right? And helps them understand their internal world and what's going on with them. So that's like a whole other, you know, thing that I like to do as well. It's sort of like, okay, you're getting really excited right now. You're looking around the room. Maybe there's too much going on. Is it too loud? Is it, you know, what's happening? Really playing like sort of like investigator, detective with the baby out loud. That's a really great way to start out.
Because they have not necessarily strong verbal communications, but it's this nonverbal communication and also tying it into their abilities of how much they can stay awake or do. Like, can you speak to that moment of overstimulation? Because I think that's something that new parents don't really necessarily know about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that is a really great point. So one of the things that really benefits babies is something like in academia called serve and return. And people can Google that and look up some videos on it. But it's essentially turn taking in both verbal and nonverbal communication with the baby. And when we're doing that, and even if we're just playing with a baby in any way that we're playing with a baby, sometimes they'll just really need a break and they'll look away. And it's important to notice that, because they do need a break, because their brains, actually, babies' brains are making 1 million connections per second, which is wild. They're really going through a lot. So they'll look away and need a break. It's important to just sort of stop and give them that break. If someone doesn't know about that, they might be like, oh, I'll put my face in front of the baby over here, and continue to maintain that eye contact or that play. And that can be quite intrusive for babies. And then they could end up getting overstimulated too. So it's great to observe that kind of behavior too. Another sign of a baby who's kind of had enough play or is overstimulated is when they when their body gets unorganized, so like flailing their arms and legs, and sort of not being balanced on both sides of their body physically. That's another sign that it's time to get more relaxed and sort of change the activity.
Yeah. So, and I can, like, as you're talking, I'm seeing babies do this in my head, right? Mm-hmm. and it's so important, because sometimes you'll miss it, and then you'll get a baby that goes quickly from "I was telling you I'm done" to "Wah-ha!"
Yeah. And that's okay. Like, you know, I think there's like so much pressure to be perfect, and it's, you know, it's so okay to miss a cue and just do better next time. You know, like there's nothing, you know, bad you can do, you know, in that kind of thing. As long, you know, you're interacting, you're listening, you're doing your best. You know, I don't want anyone to be sort of judging themselves that they're not doing it, you know, perfectly, because there is no such thing as that at all. Babies are hard to understand.
Absolutely. And it's a learning process. You guys are both learning. You're trying to figure out who this little person is. And it's more of like, the more you do it, the more you'll figure out and find your baby's rhythm. Because I think that's also an important concept of, you know, yeah, and that relates to their personality, like how often they feed, how often they sleep. Like, for each baby, that rhythm is going to be different.
Yeah, absolutely. And change over time.
Yes, absolutely.
And actually could probably get easier over time, the communication.
And then it gets worse, and then it gets easier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes. Oh my gosh, yeah.
This too will change. Are you familiar with Dunk's baby language?
No.
Oh, okay. So I'll link this in the show notes, but I think this would be really fascinating for you. And it works best like the first weeks of life. So like that newborn period. So you're in it. But it was this woman who last name Dunst, who, and I can't remember her first name, who had photographic hearing. So she was a musician, but that could really like discern tonalities in an incredible way. And then she had a baby, and she was like, I can hear that you are making 5 different sounds depending on your needs. So, you know, like you have different, like it's very easy visually to see a hunger cue versus a sleepy cue. Sometimes they're very related, but yeah, like in general, they're different.
Yeah.
Well, she could hear different sounds. So she came up with 5 different sounds, and they have to do with physiology. So, and how, like, if a baby's hungry, they're opening their mouth in a certain way, and that expels a sound that it's more like, ah, 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 ah. And there's this sort of sometimes panting. And if they're gassy, it's one way. Or if they're, and I cannot, for the life of me, remember those 5, like, what they are to, like, say them right now for you guys. But,
right.
Yeah. But there are 5, and there's an app for it. I think it's called Baby Ears. I'll link it on the show notes. And so you can practice tuning into these sounds. And sometimes they're really hard to hear, but it's just that idea of like practice is, it's the process. It's not an achievement. It's another tool to help you tune in a little bit to your baby. Because I find culturally it is what it is, but also it is to me a little sad that babies have elimination cues as well, just as they have feeding cues and hunger cues and sleeping cues. But we kind of, since we do diapers, we disregard those cues. And so quickly babies go like, oh, nobody's paying attention to this one. I'm not just like, then I won't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whereas in other cultures that don't have diapers, those babies are cued in, my parents are cued into how this baby eliminates from day one because they don't want messes.
Yeah, they need to. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was really surprised to hear how quickly sort of people can learn elimination communication. Mm-hmm. That's something I learned about recently.
I have an episode on it, and the person, you should go check it out because the person is fantastic, and I love the message that it's not black or white. It's not that you have to do, and you can just do peas and not poos, and you can do just night, you know, just days and not nights, and you can very, you know, and if you haven't done it right away, it doesn't mean you can't start at 6 months. Like she's great. Her name's Andrea Olson. I'll send it to you and I'll put it on the show notes.
That sounds great.
Yeah, of course. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this instruction manual, your baby's instruction manual. If you've been listening for a while, you know that I'm pretty much in love with Branch Basics. They've answered my wishes of finding non-toxic house cleaning products that are truly non-toxic, that don't have strong smells that leave me coughing while I clean, and that actually work. Today, I'm even more excited to tell you about Branch Basics because of an amazing offer where you can now try Branch Basics basically for free. All you need to do is pay $5 for shipping for their trial kit. The Branch Basics trial kit comes with an empty all-purpose spray bottle and a mini concentrate, which has just enough concentrate to make that full bottle. I'm guessing after using Branch Basics to clean your house, you're going to be hooked, just like I am. The all-purpose bottle comes with a beautiful smart label with a line that shows you how much water to add and then how much concentrate to add without having to think about ratios or do math. You just fill it to the lines, do a little shaking, and voila, you are ready to clean. The Branch Basic concentrate is non-GMO plant and mineral based, biodegradable, has no harmful preservatives, and has not been tested on animals. Unlike conventional cleaning products, Branch Basics products won't pollute your air nor leave behind unhealthy residues. Plus, Branch Basic actually works. Did I mention that? Choose to clean your home safely and effectively with Branch Basics. Birthful listeners in the U.S. get a free trial kit by going to branchbasics.com and entering my code BIRTHFUL5 at checkout. Just pay $5 for shipping. So that's branchbasics.com with the promo code BIRTHFUL5. That's the word birthful and the number 5. BIRTHFUL5. To get your free trial kit, you just pay $5 for shipping. branchbasics.com with promo code BIRTHFUL5. And we're back talking with Greer Kirschenbaum about the world according to your newborn. So in terms of this instruction manual, what are some, are there some other things that are really good for people to know?
Well, you know, I still hear a lot of people talking about having babies on really strict schedules, and that kind of stuff, and following books that have like really strict orders of how to structure the day and all that kind of thing. And I would really say try using the baby first. And I know that can be really intimidating, and you know, a lot of parents are nervous about taking care of a baby and really want to know like, how much time should I play and how much time should I feed and all these kinds of things. But every day is going to look different, and babies are, you know, biological organisms who have different needs every day and different, you know, sort of schedules every day. So, I mean, not totally different, but I would love if parents could do that. And that, something that goes along with that is really being confident in your parenting abilities. And we all have them built into us. So, you know, parents, we have massive brain changes when we become parents. And we, knowing about that, I think helps people be more confident that they sort of have these superpowers of parenting that they didn't have before. And we're all so capable of doing this. We just need the confidence to do it.
Yeah. Oh, so much. And I think it goes back to what you were saying of, you know, you don't have to get it perfect every time. And yeah. I think that leads into the other question I had for you, that in that those level of expectations, we often think, oh, I'm going to ruin baby's life. Mm-hmm. I've done this and now I've ruined him, her for life.
Yeah.
Have we?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is no. So, I mean, there's so much flexibility. Like I said, a million connections per second in the first few years. So, you know, we can always repair. And so that's like the first few years. But, you know, our brains also maintain a lot of plasticity throughout our lives. It just gets a lot harder to change things once we're older. But, you know, parents can repair 40 years later. You know, repair is a very, very powerful, powerful thing. So, you know, let's say, you know, sometimes we have bad days when we're a parent and we're not able to show up in the way that we wish we could all the time. And sort of, that's okay. Like that's life. Like that's the way things work, you know, and sort of saying to the baby, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm really sorry that I raised my voice. I shouldn't have done it. You know, I'm going to try my best, you know, to do better from now on. That can go a long way. Even to talk to an infant that way, even, you know, much more powerful once, you know, language is fully understood, but it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes and repair.
Well, and I think that also is teaching them that, like giving them tools for how to work with their own emotions later on.
Yeah.
Because just like we have bad days and we can't, and we're, you know, they push our buttons and we're like, oh, I'm so frustrated right now with you. Like, even expressing that gives them words to do the same of realizing it's okay to have those emotions, just not to hurt people with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And also modeling goes so, so far. So yeah, our babies are always they're mirroring almost everything that we say and do. They're on so many levels. So emotional mirroring is like sort of an emerging concept in neuroscience now, where, you know, emotions are contagious, essentially. So, and that doesn't mean like we should be hiding our negative emotions or negative feeling emotions from our kids, but we should be doing exactly what you said. So, you know, we get angry, they'll feel that anger too, because their brain kind of can pick up on our physiology. But having, you know, adult tools to deal with anger and deal with negative feeling emotions, and having our children observe us go through that whole, you know, arousal and regulation is so important for their emotional health later on.
When are they able to go through that arousal and regulation on their own? Is this like the 3-year thing?
It starts around that time. So we talked about the amygdala before. The amygdala is a really important brain area that sort of gets activated when we're feeling stressed or afraid or feeling fear. And then we need our prefrontal cortex to develop connections to sort of shut off the amygdala. So the amygdala is like, I'm afraid, I'm stressed out. And our thinking brain can say, oh, it's okay. We've experienced this before. It's not, you know, we're going to be safe. It's not a big deal. And so that can quiet the amygdala. And so those two brain regions really need to have quite complex interactions. So that emerges around age 3, but it can take, you know, throughout childhood to be really mature. And, you know, our brain never stops changing throughout our whole life, but we estimate that it's adult and fully formed, like somewhere between 25 and 30 years old.
Which explains so much.
Yeah. And adolescence is a whole different thing. So,
oh my goodness.
But we can't, people expect babies to do very adult things, like calm down on their own, control their behavior, make choices, all these kinds of things that they're just not, they don't have the brain parts to do.
And is that why, like, what is going on with the twos? What, you know, the terrible twos? I'm putting that together and going, like, there was so much my daughter could do at two, but the fact that she didn't have this sort of, you know, neo-prefrontal cortex to help her regulate,
yeah,
made so much sense in those tantrums and choices, because there's, it's like, I want it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's a really, really hard time. It's really frustrating, you know, for many reasons in that age, that there's things that children want to do, but they can't either physically or mentally do it. It's difficult to, you know, transition. There's so many difficult things. And it's the best tool for parents during that time is, again, to be this external brain and to not be afraid of the tantrums and not to be afraid of these huge explosions of emotion, but to be able to sit with your child and just say, and label the emotions. I, you know, this is sort of Dan Siegel's work, which is great, is sitting with them and say, I know, I'm imagining you might be really, really angry right now that we need to, you know, get our coat on and leave the house. I get it. I'm here for you, and sort of let them experience it and not try to shut it down or inhibit it. That's actually not the best example, because sometimes you really need to leave the house, but you know what I mean?
Well, and you're like, I remember my reaction and like a general reaction when you're trying to get out of the house or you're out in the supermarket and your kid's suddenly throwing a tantrum. You just, you know, there's so easy to then back to that emotions being contagious. It's hard for you not to go like, oh, be frustrated. Yeah. And then go like, you need to stop or we're leaving now, you know. And then
it's so hard.
But there was,
if you're not in a rush, I mean, I feel like if you're not in a rush, it's, you know, sometimes you just need to, like, you know, pick up your child and, you know, move on. But if you're not in a rush, it is great to be able to just sort of sit with them and let it happen.
Mm-hmm. So if we take it back to more little ones, right? Not the 2-year-olds, but like the months old, in terms of when they're having a really hard time and sort of in that unconsolable place, what are some things parents can do to help them out?
Yeah. So this is that's a great point. I love to teach people too, is sometimes without knowing how important the parent's input is to the child's brain to be close, people think, oh, well, if they're going to be crying in my arms or crying out of my arms, what's the difference? And there's a huge difference. So when, as difficult and, you know, it's so difficult, as it is to hold a, you know, a crying baby who's just, you know that they're not hungry, uncomfortable, or anything that you can immediately solve for them. And sometimes they just need to cry. Holding them close, walking around, if it's possible, putting them in a carrier, speaking in low tones, singing, talking to them, all this kind of stuff eventually will regulate them or at least allow them to feel safe while they experience whatever they're experiencing, whatever negative feeling they're experiencing.
And I can't remember what research, I don't have it off the top of my head, and maybe you are more familiar with the research I'm thinking of, that compared like what happened to babies' stress hormones when in this unconsolable state while being held versus not being held.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So their stress levels do get to a very high level if they're not being held. And when they're in your arms, like I said, you're being like this missing brain part for them. So you actually are regulating them. It appears like you're not. It appears like they're just crying and they won't stop. So you might think, oh, well, their stress is still really high, but actually the parent really buffers their stress levels. So their stress level doesn't get to a very high point in arms versus out of arms.
Which I find is such a revelation, because it, when you're in it, it can be so frustrating that nothing's working. But just knowing that you are making a difference by holding that baby can be like, okay, I am making a difference. Like, this is going to end. It's going to,
I'm doing my job. I'm doing a good job. You know, I'm here for my baby, and verbalizing it too. And just like, I'm here for you. I know that this, you know, being in my arms is feeling good. You know, express what you need to. Talking through it helps a lot as well. But it is tough.
It's so tough. But I think it's also important to realize that if, because of what you're saying of emotions being contagious, and we all know this, if somebody walks into a room all cranky pants, we can feel it.
Yeah.
So if you're getting more anxious or you're getting more upset, your baby's also gonna feel. So even though you might be holding them and bouncing and doing all this, if you're like, oh, can you just stop? Mm-hmm. That energy is canceling out, or to an extent, anything that you're doing. So if you can like take deep breaths and calm your nervous system.
Yeah. Yes. That is the best parenting tool. I mean, when I'm with a baby and my own baby in that kind of situation, I just try to do, like you said, very deep breaths, sometimes attempt to like meditate a little bit. Although it is hard, but at least control, you do have control over your breath. So that I feel like is the best tool in that situation.
Mm, and I did a lot of work with, or an episode with Parijat Deshpande, who does a lot of work about high risk pregnancy, and how, I'll link it in the show notes also, although it's a different topic, but how your mind and body are so connected that sometimes we're often going cognitive and trying to like calm the mind to calm the body. But if you can calm the body, then the mind's going to follow. So especially when you don't have much time for that mind to do their work, that doing it the other way around, just like forget the mind, focus on the breath, that can work faster.
Yeah. Knowing maybe even just being a little cognitive in the beginning and being like, this is temporary. My baby will calm down, and now let me calm down. And then just sort of trying to ride through it and not work yourself up to be like, oh, this is never going to stop and this is bad. You know, you know that I'm doing my best. I'm doing a great job right now. I'm going to calm down and then this will pass.
Mm. Greer, what about the differences between like the concept of attachment versus attachment parenting, and kind of like going back to that, what are those effects in terms of how your experience shapes your brain, your early experiences shapes your brain and it shapes your mental health, like in terms of confidence levels or dependency and interdependency, what are some experiences that can negatively shape mental health in the long run that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I think that the thing that's so exciting about like what I want everybody to know about and trying to write a book about it and try to just get this out is the neuroscience research that's been done in the past like 10 to 15 years is really complementary of the psychology that's been around since like the 50s, since like Bowlby. And how important sort of showing like real, you know, neurobiology about how a secure attachment can shape an emotional system in the brain. So when we respond sort of in a positive, reliable way to baby's distress, it physically builds multiple levels of the stress system in the brain. So this is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or the HPA axis that people talk about a lot. It builds neurotransmitter systems to be biased towards positive mental health. And it builds brain structures that way too. So other brain structures that way as well. So the things that would put the emotional brain at risk for poor mental health and other sort of social risks, like confidence and learning and all these other kinds of things, would be to sort of reliably ignore cues, ignore distress cues, and also to not respond to them in a reliable way. So babies, psychology and their neuroscience depend on knowing that they have access to be calmed down. And this is for infants and, you know, all the way up to even adults, right? Like we seek out regulation from other people as well as adults. So, and babies need it even more. So I think that babies feel the best and also their brains are built the strongest when they have no question in their mind, when I'm upset and feel bad when I'm stressed, that I know that I can rely on someone to make that better.
So to sum it all up, just have your baby's back.
Yes, exactly.
Which is something we all want. It's true. Like, yeah. We all want to feel that if things get really bad, somebody there is going to be, you know, there for us.
Yes.
That makes total sense.
Absolutely. So I hope that this spoiling kind of stuff is going out the window and we can move past it.
Well, and knowing that, you know, for quite a bit, you don't have to, you can't set down bad habits. Or I guess, can you? Yeah. I didn't ask the question. Can you set down bad habits?
No, not at all. It's not possible. So yeah, there's, you know, you don't want to, we talked about a little bit about over responding or sort of what people call helicopter parenting. But that's not what we're talking about here. No, you definitely can't set up bad habits. And every time your baby gets distressed, it's helpful to respond.
Yeah, and I guess it's not so much bad habits as learned response. So in terms of the over-responding and that helicoptering, like if your child is trying to figure out that, okay, if I do this, people are going to respond reliably, mm-hmm. But that no matter what they do, people over-respond, does that have like just as negative effects as if they weren't responding reliably?
That's a really good question. I need to look into that. I know that over-responding can be intrusive, and that could be stressful in itself. But yeah, I need to look further into that question. I don't know the answer to that.
And I guess that kind of answers my question. Like what I was looking for is like, why is over-responding
right.
negative, right? Why was right. that cause problems?
Yeah. And that in itself, it could be stressful because, I mean, a secure attachment has two sides. It's being reliably there when stress is there to calm the baby, but it's also giving opportunities for exploration and curiosity and independence. And so sometimes attachment parenting can be confused with maybe this sort of helicoptering thing where you have the baby on always and you're always there and always present and not giving those opportunities for exploration and independence. And the key word there is giving the opportunities for it, because if you present the opportunity to your baby and they don't want it, then you want to listen to that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they say no, thank you.
Yeah.
Then you're like, okay, we'll try it again some other time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fantastic. So as we wrap up, is there anything you want to make sure we leave that the listeners, like we didn't get to, that you want to make sure people know about?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the best things to take home are, well, actually, yeah, one thing I mentioned before that I sort of learned the stuff firsthand and sort of grew up in a family where baby's communication was, you know, fawned over and highly valued. And everyone's like, oh, look, they're making this noise. And, you know, really, really noticing the things that going on with the baby. But I think now maybe that's hard. It's not that way for a lot of people. And like I said, I'm still learning that kind of stuff from my mom, with my own baby right now. I think it's a really great idea to get someone like that in your life if you're questioning it. So, I mean, postpartum doulas are infant experts. They spend all their time communicating and understanding babies. And either that or a friend or a family member, someone who like speaks baby, I think is like would be really great to support new families.
Kind of to
Having
show
someone
you
like
the
that in their
way.
life.
Yeah. And then build your own confidence with it too. Because, and I so love that and appreciate that approach instead of like trying to find that answer in keeping logs and keeping schedules and adhering to a structure, which is not necessarily, it t actually takes you away from observing the baby.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think people really want to, I think every single parent wants to do the best possible thing. And sometimes that worry kind of would get channeled into that, overscheduling and all that kind of stuff. But if we could sort of channel it into just understanding baby communication and growing your confidence, that will be so helpful for everybody, I think.
Greer, if people want to connect with you and follow what you're doing and learn more about, this upcoming book that I'm just going to put it out there. It's an upcoming book. Where can they do that?
So I have I communicate the most on Instagram, and so my company is called Nurture Neuroscience. So you could find me on Instagram there, and then I'll have a link to my website on my Instagram page, and yeah, and then something new I'm doing is creating an infant sleep educator program with Bebo Mia.
I love
I'm really
Bebo
excited
Mia.
about that. Yeah, they're amazing. So, yeah, if anyone wants to, look into that too, that's another way that we're gonna get this information out.
Yeah, and I did a I'll link it to the show notes just because again, it's more things that relate. I did a show with the Bebo gals, Bebo babes, a while ago, so I'll link it on the show notes too.
Cool.
Thank you so very much. This was a lovely talk.
Thank you so much.
Mighty ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as @birthful, so come say hi. And if you want to hear about how the birthing person's brain changes, size, and reorganizes to gain some super nurturing skills, then you should join us over at the Birthful Patreon page, where you'll get the extra audio content for this episode and all other episodes by becoming an official Birthful supporter. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. And if you want to combine the two, at patreon.com/birthful, there's a reward where you can get discount codes for the Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation as a thank you reward. So, yes, go check those out. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Birth Song Botanicals and Branch Basics. Go to Birth Song Botanicals and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off your postpartum herb baths. And go to branchbasics.com and use the code BIRTHFUL5 for a free trial kit. You just pay for shipping. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful podcast. Thank you so, so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Lozada.